That's right. They said run it back. We're back for another day of the rundown here on ESPN 102.5. The Game, Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth hanging out, Marquise Munson as well, as we actually have some news to discuss today as we get you set locally for your day in sports. Ryan, what's up? How are you?
What's up, Chase? How are we doing this morning?
You know, I'm feeling good because, you know, we were texting and it's like, man, we actually got some stuff to talk about. So you can also, one thing that you can participate in, that voting is opening as we speak, as we come on the air, our bracket for the best athlete in the last 30 years, our Nashville sports bracket, had a nice turnout yesterday, and no really huge surprises, Ryan. It looked like it was pretty much all chalk.
Yeah, it was mostly chalk. The only, I guess you could say, upset or say lower seed that advanced was Javon Curse, a 5 seed. Yep. Knocking off P.K. Subban, a 4 seed, I have a feeling today it could be a little bit more wide open with some of the voting. I'm interested to see what the fans think with a lot of the matchups that are taking place for the next 12 hours all the way up until 9 p.m. this evening.
Yeah, so we have Eddie George taking on John Jenkins, Mike Fisher up against Kimmo Tiimonen, which that's going to be tough. That's going to be a mix of the, you know, the old Preds fan, the new Preds fan. Two different eras there, but two tremendous individuals going head-to-head. Blaine Bishop, Kevin Dyson, a Titans matchup of the guys of the days of old. Brad Hopkins against Mookie Betts. Pecorine against Delanie Walker. Victor Arvidsson against Sonny Gray. Bruce Matthews up against Drew Maddux. And Philip Forsberg taking on Derrick Henry. I'm intrigued by that one.
Yes, Philip Forsberg, current Pred star. Derrick Henry, current Titans star. There's not the, some of these matchups have been a current Titans player versus a former Preds player or vice versa, where they played in different eras and there could be recency bias. I think the only recency bias in that one could be the fact that Derrick Henry, you know, carried the Titans all the way to the AFC Championship game, which is the reason why he's a 2 seed, a big reason why he's a 2 seed in this bracket. But I know Philip Forsberg, one of the top fan favorites in Preds history, so to see how that vote turns out is definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah, so you can go to our Twitter page at 1025 The Game and participate in that. As Ryan said, voting will be open until 9 o'clock this evening, so you can jump on that. We've had a lot of fun. We've had some of these guys on. We had Jeff Fisher on yesterday, and you and I are going to jump into that coming up in just a few. But it was good to talk to him and to hear some stories about some of the people that are on this bracket.
Absolutely, and we've also seen a lot of the players that Jeff Fisher coached, kind of those heyday Titans players. They've been really favored in this bracket when it comes to fan voting. So a couple more coming up today: Bruce Matthews, like you said, against Drew Maddux; Brad Hopkins, a 7 seed against Mookie Betts, a 2 seed, and then obviously, you know, Blaine Bishop versus Kevin Dyson head to head. So Eddie George, a 1 seed against John Jenkins, an 8 seed. So a lot more of those vintage / heritage Titans players to be voted on today.
Ryan, we're sitting here and we're talking about brackets, and it's not the NCAA tournament. The national championship should have been last night. It was not. I know that hurts. So we've been sitting here and we're just clamoring because I'm watching old games. I got an old race on right now. I mean, I've been watching old baseball games, old basketball games. But then last night, as I'm winding down, I'm browsing Twitter, and I see an article from Jeff Passan of ESPN, and I perked up immediately because it said, source, MLB union focused on plan that could allow season to start as early as May in Arizona. So basically what they're saying is they would take over the Phoenix area. They could use Chase Field plus, you know, ton of spring training facilities in that area, and they could start play without fans. I immediately jumped out of bed. I was very excited. I mean, I would love to, you know, I have a baseball trip planned in June that probably isn't going to happen.
No,
we have your bachelor party.
Chase, it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Let's just cut to the chase there.
Huh. Yeah, good effort. But I think that, you know, our baseball trips aren't going to happen. Yours for your bachelor party isn't going to happen. But if we see games, even though fans aren't there, I'll take it because that means sports are back. MLB would be the first.
Well, yeah, and in this report, Jeff Passan said that there are a number of stumbling blocks, and a few come to mind right away when it comes to the potential of putting Major League Baseball in Arizona and basically isolating all 30 teams and its members in hotels and stadiums. A couple stumbling blocks right off the top of my head. First, will the players actually agree to this, knowing that they may go months without seeing their families? And a lot of the players love playing in front of the fans. I would say all players love playing in front of fans. Do they want to play in front of, seriously, empty stadiums just to get games in? That will be interesting to see if MLB players would agree to something like that. And I think it's also important to remember that these aren't just sandlot games. It's not like it would just be the players and key staff members and managers and coaches, what have you. I mean, if these are official MLB games, there would be more staff involved in and around the stadium. There would be umpires, there would be grounds crew. I would assume select media members would be allowed to go cover the games. Are there going to be team broadcasters? Are there, it, you know, there's always a guy who comes out and hands the umpires the replay headset. There are different elements to that that could make it tougher to really police this for the amount of time that they would be wanting to pull this off. And it's also important to remember that Arizona out west is one of the hot states when it comes to coronavirus. It's not California and it's not Washington, but it's not like Arizona has been immune to this virus. So yes, I think it's cool to think about, but it's important to remember those potential stumbling blocks. And I'm not going to get my hopes up with this report until we hear more from Major League Baseball. And if this does come to fruition, great. I would love to see it. I think all of us who are just dying to see sports would love to see it. I think what's important to watch is how something similar takes place in South Korea. South Korea, a baseball league over there, is attempting this with some preseason games and then potentially going right into their season in empty stadiums, and that's supposed to be here in the next couple weeks. So seeing how it works in South Korea is important, but also important to remember that South Korea is probably the poster child country when it comes to flattening the curve and keeping the virus limited. So yes, a lot of stumbling blocks to keep in mind when it comes to this report.
Yeah, and another thing too, with this being in Arizona, you mentioned, you know, that it's been a hotbed for the coronavirus, and that's true, but as it gets warmer, and we all know that it can get pretty hot in Arizona, I think that is going to help
Sure.
things. And that's something that, you know, health officials have been saying as we get into the warmer months, that is going to help flatten this curve. So I think that that's one reason why they're looking at warmer climates. And, you know, we've seen reports that if they get the season started, that the postseason could be in neutral sites in warmer places because, you know, if you're playing at Fenway in November, you know how cold it could be there. That's something that they have to look at as well. But I love the idea of this. I'm with you. I'm going to temper my expectations until they actually have a full plan in place. But Jeff Passan of ESPN did say that if they are to do this, it'll kind of be like playing baseball on Mars.
This is going to be, Scott, potentially, if the games end up getting played like baseball on Mars. This is going to be something like we have never seen before in baseball. And I think because this season almost has an automatic asterisk to it because of all the complications and the oddities and the hoops that you're going to be jumping through just to get playing, I think that Major League Baseball and the players are going to be open to a whole lot of changes that make the game different than you have seen.
I think everybody has to be open to changes to make not only baseball but all sports different. We're in a time where nobody ever expected this to happen. Nobody ever fathomed. I mean, this is like out of a movie, Ryan. I mean, that you know, you would see. There was a Billy Joel song called Miami 2017. I mean, that's what this feels like. So I think that we all have to change our way of thinking, and we all have to be open to some crazy ideas. And some are going to work, some aren't going to work. This is one that I think has potential. Now, you mentioned all the stumbling blocks that they have to get through. that's something that they're going to have to work through as they go. But I like that I'm hearing ideas as opposed to we're just going to sit around and wait for a vaccine and waiting for this thing to go away, mm-hmm. and then sports will come back. I think from an economic standpoint, the president of the United States doesn't meet with all the major sports commissioners if he doesn't have a major reason to do that. And I believe that reason is he knows how important sports are to this country, not because we're entertained, but from an economic standpoint. And you get some games back, you're stimulating the economy a little bit. So I think that I applaud Major League Baseball for getting together and trying to figure something out. And so far, the players and the league, they're talking.
I think what would be interesting to know is, you know, yesterday we mentioned how all these leagues likely have dozens of different scenarios when it comes to either resuming their season or starting their season and how to start and end it. What would be interesting is if Major League Baseball, for the first portion of their season, played these games in Arizona, and then, you know, if President Trump is correct, which I'm not going to hold my breath in thinking the president is going to be correct on the August timeline of sports returning, but if he is correct, if, you know, let's say the first half of the season, all these games played in empty stadiums in Arizona, and then the second half of the season back in the stadiums in their home cities. Just a fascinating way to look at it, and a potential way to get all 162 in, or at least a large majority of them in, instead of just a 60 or 80 game season.
Yeah, if they get 162 in, though, I'm going to be very surprised, even starting with, you know, under this scenario. But
well, I mean, if they are willing to go to, say, Thanksgiving with the World Series,
true,
and you mix in some doubleheaders in Arizona, I think it's possible.
Yeah, it very well could be. It very well could be. So we will find out. Jeff Passan with that report for ESPN. Real quick, some other news and notes. John Hines, the Predators head coach, did a Zoom call yesterday with the media and was able to answer some questions. Kevin Wilson from the Predators was moderating and just able to kind of give an update on where things are. He spoke on what the season should look like if they return.
It's really unknown, and obviously, like everybody, I've been in contact with David, who's been in contact with the league, and you kind of see what's going on the internet of as far as possible scenarios. But I think the thing that's most important is the league will make the right decision as far as what's the most equitable, fair, and what makes the most sense for the league. You know, I'm not sure what that is. I just know that for the Nashville Predators, that if it does come back, we're going to play some high stakes hockey, whether that's finish some games in the regular season to get into the playoffs. If it starts now and you go with teams on standings and points percentage, we'd be in the playoffs. So I think the most important thing for us as coaches and obviously our players too, is just understanding that, well, whatever the league decides is going to be the right thing and the right way to go about it. We just need to make sure that we're prepared to get back, and if it does get back, to be able to play some high-stakes hockey, and I think that's exciting.
John Hines, the Predators head coach, and he went on to say in that press conference, whatever you want to call it, that, you know, they're in constant communication with the coaching staff, with the players. He talked about a rotation that they have with the coaching staff of each are taking like five players and calling them, and so they're talking to their guys. They let them get away for a little bit, kind of process all this, be with their families, but it does sound like, from what I gathered from that, Ryan, that if the season were to return, you know, here shortly, that the Predators would be ready.
Yeah, and I think all 31 teams in the NHL would be ready. When it comes to the NHL or, say, Major League Baseball or NBA, it's going to take probably a three-week process to get back up to speed. I mean, Major League Baseball, they were in, what, their second or third week of spring training. The NHL, that it's virtually going to have to be like a training camp just right to get back up to speed, because you can't risk only having a 7 to 10 day period of having practices or what have you, and then risk getting hurt just because you're trying to rush back into it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. So it's continues to be a process, and unfortunately, it just signs are pointing where I'm not sure this season is going to be able to be finished for the NHL or the NBA, but time will tell. He is Ryan Porth. I am Chase McCabe. When we come back, Jeff Fisher, the former Titans head coach, joined us on Darren Donick and Chase yesterday. He discussed two topics in particular preparing for this year's NFL draft, and the running back Derrick Henry. You will hear on both of those when we return the Rundown ESPN. Former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher on Darren Donick and Chase yesterday on the NFL draft and how teams will prepare for that. Welcome back into the Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out with you. And Ryan, I thought it was interesting, and he didn't get into everything in that clip because coach does have a lot of opinions, and that's why we enjoy having him on. But he also brought up, you know, that how you go through your evaluation process of the player, and you have the combine, so you got that, so you were able to pick some things up from there, but you're missing out on team visits, the pro days, the one-on-one interaction with the players. You have the film that you can rely on, so that's something that's going to be different. But also, he said towards the end that after the draft is over, I mean, there's no sleep because you're signing undrafted free agents. And so that's going to change that entire process of trying to get those guys that don't get their name called on draft night, you know, trying to get them signed. So this is an interesting time. I mean, the DeAndre Hopkins trade that we've all been talking about for weeks is not official yet because neither player, David Johnson or DeAndre Hopkins, they haven't gone through the physical yet. So the trade is not official. This is where the NFL is right now. So I thought those were some interesting comments from Jeff Fisher.
Mm-hmm. Well, 100%. And if the NFL is going to try to conduct all of this through Zoom, I did see a report this morning saying that a lot of people are starting to get their Zoom calls hacked, which would be an interesting dynamic of the NFL draft. If say the Bengals are trying to swing a deal for that first overall pick, the Dolphins have an abundance of draft capital to trade from. And let's say, you know, someone with, I don't know, the LA Chargers staff hacks into the Dolphins and Bengals, Zoom call. If they're trying to swing a deal on Zoom, you know, is that going to affect how the Chargers then go to the Bengals with a trade proposal, or, you know, the Chargers hacking into the Dolphins Zoom call to see who they're thinking about picking, and then they want to trade up in front of them? It's definitely going to be a fascinating draft. And I think what would also be funny is if, let's say, John Robinson or another GM is in the middle of a pick, you know, are NFL GMs basically going to make the pick over Zoom like NHL GMs do at the arenas when the NHL draft goes on? And if so, what if their doorbell rings in the middle of a pick and then you can't hear the pick? So, like, it's just a whole lot of different scenarios that could lead to a fascinating and humorous draft night experience.
I did just see this, that the New England Patriots have been told they have to use faxes. They cannot use Zoom. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but no, look,
it would turn into Zoomgate.
It'd be so fitting with Belichick on that, but you bring up some very good points, but I'll go back to something that I said when we were talking about the baseball stuff. This is where we are. I don't think they really have a choice. If they want the draft to go on as scheduled, and the NFL has been hell-bent on that the draft is going to go on as scheduled, this is how they're going to have to do it. And so, yeah, you bring up a lot of concerns that could things be hacked. And it's not just the teams. It's some idiot on his couch that, you know, is really good with computers that be like, hey, I'm going to ruin the NFL draft, or I'm going to start, you know, tipping picks and hacking in and knowing what they're going to do. Those are all major concerns. But for the teams, I know that the league, they're going to send memos and they're going to talk to the teams. Don't screw this up. I mean, just I understand that you probably have somebody on your staff that could pull that off and could probably do it and not get caught, but don't do it, because you're going to make a difficult situation even worse, and you're going to screw things up for everybody if you do that. So I really hope that there isn't a team that's thinking, okay, well, let's see what the Titans are going to do at 29, or, oh, well, let's see what's going to happen with the 13th pick or whatever. I really hope that doesn't happen, because that just would be complete. That would just make this even worse.
I kind of hope it does, just to add a different wrinkle into this draft process. I mean, look, all of this is unique.
Just love
all
controversy.
I mean, why not? I mean, look, I'm sure the Patriots employ somebody who is thinking, how can I hack into the Jets, Dolphins, and Bills draft Zoom calls? I guarantee you there's someone on that staff thinking, how can we do this? Because, like you mentioned, I mean, they are notorious for things like this. So who knows if it is truly going to work. I would love to know the logistics of it. You know, is there going to be a mass Zoom call of all the Titans scouts and, you know, Vrabel and John Robinson, and then when it's time to pick, all the scouts and Mike Vrabel, they all hide their video, so it's only John Robinson on ESPN. Is there a second computer for John Robinson to turn to make his pick opposite of the one he's on with the scouts? Just, I would love to know how they will pull that off logistically.
Well, I don't think you're going to know until after. I mean, that now that's one thing that I would kind of agree with. If the NFL's like, listen, we're not going to tell anybody how we're going to pull this off until after we do it, because number one, they don't know how they're going to pull this off until after they do it. They don't know if anything's going to work because they've never done this before. Mm-hmm. Number two, if they come out and they're like, hey, here's our plan, here's our playbook, this is how we're going to do this. Now you're just telling somebody, you know, whether it's a team or the idiot on his couch that, you know, wants his 15 minutes, like, hey, this is the best time for you to mess this up. This is the best time for you to hack in. So I do agree with the, and, you know, you're going to figure it out as the broadcast happens, but I kind of think you play this as close to the vest as possible just to try and eliminate things that we've been talking about of hacking and all of that.
That's my opinion. I would agree with you.
So it does change things. What do you make of the whole process of physicals and everything that they've gone through? You know, the DeAndre Hopkins, David Johnson trade is not official, as I said earlier. And like, it took the Titans almost a week and a half to announce Vic Beasley because of that scenario. I mean, think about this. You see trades at the draft, like Randy Moss got traded at the draft. So you know, once that happens on draft night, I mean, you're trading picks, you're trading players, and then those picks are going to be used. Well, what if you trade a player on draft night and then you find out 3 weeks later that he failed the physical, but the trade's already been made. You've already used that pick. I mean, that could be that could change some things.
Well, I think in that scenario, couldn't they do it basically like the NBA does it? If we want to have Marquise chime in here, Marquise, don't the NBA trades, when they're made on draft night, a team still selects the team that is trading the pick still selects that player and is their property for X amount of time?
Yeah, I mean, the most infamous one obviously is, you know, basically Kobe got drafted to the Charlotte Hornets, had the Charlotte Hornets jersey, hat, everything, but obviously everybody knew that he was going to end up going to the Lakers. So yeah, they usually do that because those trades aren't really finalized yet until free agency starts. So that's when all those trades are actually finalized.
Yeah, so taking what the NBA does there, Chase, and implementing it within the NFL draft is probably how that would happen.
Yeah, and that could work. I mean, if there's a system in place already with another league, then I think you could make that work. But these are all the things that we think about, because now we're thinking in a realm that we never have before. And so I think, you know, like you were bringing up the hacking stuff, I'm bringing up physicals, and these are just things that come top of mind because, oh, well, what if this happens and this happens and this happens? But the bottom line is they're going to have to do this. So,
well, and the physical part of things is probably why Jadeveon Clowney isn't on a team right now.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That is a very good point because of his injury history. And, you know, it could be, I mean, I've seen reports that it could be closer to training camp. Well, the idea is closer to training camp, there'll be a sense of normalcy. So he could be able to take a physical then. And sign with the team. So we'll see how that shakes out. Jeff Fisher with comments on that. But he also talked about running back Derrick Henry. You'll hear from him on that when we come back. It is The Rundown. He is Ryan Porth. I am Chase McCabe on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out back at the Wholesale Inc. Game Nashville Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, so as we said, Jeff Fisher was on with us yesterday, and there were two things that I wanted to get into in this segment. Number one, Derrick Henry. Of course, I'm not going to have the former Titans head coach on I have to bring up the running back because he's been in these situations before as a head coach. Eddie George needed a long-term deal. Chris Johnson, he was here when Chris Johnson got the long-term deal. So, I mean, these are all things that Jeff Fisher has experienced before as a head coach, Coach Todd Gurley with the Rams as well. So he knows about the whole running back and the career lifespan of the running back position. But it also ties into the relationship that the coach and the GM have to have with one another through something like this, because you can't have the head coach coming out and having one stance and then the GM coming out and having another stance. They have to be unified. They have to be on the same page. So there are two comments that I want to play from Jeff Fisher on this. Marquise, the first one on that relationship that you have to have and that he had with Floyd Reese when it came to situations like this.
You know, I was really lucky to have Floyd there with me because my philosophy as a head coach was that I wasn't going to get in the negotiation. Basically, it ended up being, you know, we would talk, yes, you really want him back? Yeah, I really want him back. Man, okay, we'll do what we can to get him back. And, you know, he would usually get it worked out. But from a coach's perspective, you know, it's not on either side of the spectrum. It doesn't make sense to ask a guy to take a pay cut or get a guy to do a deal, and then you come back as a head coach and you want to ask him to play hard for you. So I stayed out of those, but Floyd, for the most part, got those things done.
Jeff Fisher on Floyd Reese, 2-6 weekdays on Jared and the GM. Floyd Reese, you like that, Ryan? That
good nice story. Plug there.
So
well done.
I think that's important in a situation like this with a franchise player that – the GM and the head coach, they've had those conversations. And when I heard him say that about Floyd, because we all know back in the early days of the Titans when they were building this thing from scratch, Jeff Fisher and Floyd Reese were attached at the hip putting this together. And that's what we have seen with Mike Vrabel and John Robinson. And I feel like that the conversations that Jeff Fisher was talking about have probably taken place many times between those two.
Yeah, and, you know, it also goes back to, what was it, the 2006 draft, where everyone may not have been on the same page about Vince Young, where it's a notorious story where Bud Adams went in there and said, I want Vince Young. And,
right,
you know, Floyd and Jeff Fisher may have had different thoughts on who to take at quarterback there early in the 2006 draft. So, yeah, I think it's extremely important for John Robinson and Mike Vrabel to be on the same page, and I would assume they are with how valuable someone like Derrick Henry is to that team. Anyone watching the Tennessee Titans last year knows how valuable Derrick Henry was to that run to the AFC Championship. And I know a lot of people would like to say that run to even get into the playoffs, let alone get to the AFC Championship, was more credited towards Ryan Tannehill. I think those two working together, both excelling at a high level, helped each other out almost equally, rather than saying it was all credit to Tannehill or all credit to Derrick Henry. But at the same time, this Titans team is worse off if Derrick Henry is not their running back. And you would think John Robinson feels that way, especially with some of the comments that he made at the combine, and you would think that Mike Vrabel feels the same way as well.
Yeah, and I believe that the reason Mike Vrabel is the head coach is because of that GM-coach relationship. I always felt that Mike Mularkey did a good job, but there were going to be differences between John Robinson and Mike Mularkey because Mularkey wasn't John Robinson's hire. They were brought in together. It was Amy Adams Strunk and the organization saying, hey, you two work together. Now, as we have kind of learned, I think there was a conversation with John Robinson that was like, hey, if this doesn't work, then you're going to be able to make your hire. And that's what happened. He brought in Mike Vrabel. And so that relationship so far has been pretty good. It's been similar to that of what Floyd and Jeff had back in the day. But continuing the conversation on Derrick Henry, Jeff Fisher expands upon that and how important he is to the offense and this team.
Well, I think it's pretty simple. You pay him. You know, I mean, you pay him what's fair and you get him in there and, you know, whatever you want to do. I mean, I was really lucky to have Floyd there with me because my philosophy as a head coach was that I wasn't going to get in the negotiations. Basically, it ended up being, you know, we would talk. Yes, you really want him back? Yeah, I really want him back. Man, okay, we'll do what we can to get him back. And, you know, he would usually get it worked out. But from a coach's perspective, you know, it's not on either side of the spectrum. It doesn't make sense to ask a guy to take a pay cut or to get a guy to do a deal, and then you come back as a head coach and you want to ask him to play hard for you. So I stayed out of those. But Floyd, for the most part, got those things done. But back to your question, I mean, this guy, he turned this team. And, you know, I watched it closely this year. I watched the playoffs. When all this other stuff was going on out there and, you know, with Baltimore with this new offense and this and that, and they got back to freaking football basics, which was defense and run the football and go figure, you find a quarterback and all good things start to happen. Well, Derek was the guy.
Jeff Fisher on Titans running back Derrick Henry, and yeah, he was the guy. I mean, Eddie George told us, we talked about this yesterday, Ryan, that he was the focal point of the offense. I think anybody that watches this team can see that. But I thought it was interesting of Jeff Fisher to bring up the fact that it was the old school football of getting back to running the ball, playing defense. That's what those Titans teams of the late 90s and the early 2000s did. I mean, you had Eddie George, you had Steve McNair that was developing. You knew that he was going to get to a point where he could win you some games, and he did that, but they also had a stout defense. That's the formula that the Titans of now are trying to use as well.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And at the same time, the fact that Ryan Tannehill was able to open up the passing game with his downfield passing and accuracy to guys like A.J. Brown and Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis and Tajay Sharp, the fact that he was able to do that, I felt, really opened up the running game and kept defenses at bay instead of, you know, when Marcus Mariota was under center, you didn't really, you know, defenses didn't have to really respect Marcus Mariota, especially 10, 20 yards downfield. And really in the first month of the season, you didn't have to respect Marcus Mariota throwing a screen pass. So the fact that Ryan Tannehill was able to stretch the field definitely helped Derrick Henry, and if Ryan Tannehill can keep that up, then I don't think this is just going to be a run offense and a stout defense and winning that way. Yes, that is your bread and butter, but if Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown have the same chemistry in 2020 like they did in 2019, and Jonnu Smith takes the next step, and you get a backup running back in there that can kind of be the scat back that spells Derrick Henry from time to time, then I think you're going to have a much more balanced offense than maybe those Titans offenses back in the heyday.
Yeah, I think you have to have that. And Jeff Fisher, he talked about that, of you got to find the guy behind him to take some of those carries away. And for everybody that's concerned about the wheels falling off on Derrick Henry, that's why this draft is so important. Because I felt like if they were going to sign a backup running back, they would have done it already. Now, there's a chance that they could do that later on after the draft, but I believe that they're going to look at that position in this draft, because there are a lot of talented running backs that you can find in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth round. It doesn't matter. And Jeff Fisher actually talked about that, about adding a second running back.
If I have any words of advice for them, would make sure you got a number two also. Because it's hard to do that year after year. We had a rare guy in Eddie to do it for so long. But Derek's just coming of age. And I think the people that I've talked to about Derek, you know, I talked to Taylor, LaJuan a little bit about him. And they love him, and he's all about work. And so I would find a way to get him done. And then I would watch his miles, change his tires, and watch the miles you put on him, because he can win a lot of games for you.
Watch the miles, and that's why getting somebody that you know can give you a couple of series in a game. And again, I think that this draft is full of guys like that. Keyshawn Vaughn is somebody, Ryan, that we know from his time here at Vanderbilt, and I know a lot of people are high on him. Now, there's a concern. Can he stay healthy? That's something that keeps coming up, but I do believe if a guy like that is available, the Tennessee Titans are going to take him, and that's going to help you know, keep Derrick Henry fresh as the season goes on.
That would be really cool to see Keyshawn Vaughn in a Titans uniform, you know, really staying local with someone like him. So that would be really cool. Look, they're going to need someone to spell Derrick Henry, especially with a 17th game. You know, once they get into a 17-game regular season, then you want to pace Derrick Henry a little bit. Derrick Henry has been someone these last two seasons where he has closed a lot stronger than he started. So keep, like Jeff Fisher said, watch the miles. You know, find a reliable number two that that can help you win games maybe in the first half or three-fourths of the season. Then, you know, really rely on Derrick Henry down the stretch and into the playoffs if you're lucky enough to make it.
And I think another thing that'll help that too is A.J. Brown continues to develop and you find who's going to be that number two receiver. Give Tannehill more weapons through the air. You know, does Corey Davis have a breakout year knowing that, and they haven't announced what they're going to do with the fifth year option, but I would assume they're not going to pick it up.
No.
And so knowing that, you know, this is probably it for him if he doesn't do something, or do they address that position in the draft? That's another one. I know there are some talented wide receivers. This is a deep receiver class in this draft, so I could almost see the Titans doing that as well. So that was Jeff Fisher giving his thoughts on Derrick Henry. There is a statement from Major League Baseball on the Arizona report. We will get to that when we return. It is the Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though we're holed up in our own homes, we'll get through this, Nashville, like we do everything else, together. Go to RockNashville.com to support local businesses who are supporting you. Welcome back in to the Rundown, Chase McCabe and Ryan Porth. Darren Donick and Chase coming up in just a few minutes at 10:15. We'll talk to Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports. He was a part of the HBO documentary The Scheme on the cheating in college basketball, so looking forward to that. John Jenkins, former Vandy basketball star, he will join us at 11 o'clock. Field Yates of ESPN at 1. Great get by Marquise. Looking forward to that. But Ryan, Major League Baseball has a statement. All these sports leagues doing statements lately, but they've come out with one on the report of playing in Arizona.
Yeah, the report coming out last night about the possibility of starting the season in Arizona from Jeff Passan of ESPN.com, and it's been widely discussed ever since that report came out of what could happen. We started the show with it, and Major League Baseball has come out with a statement this morning saying, quote, MLB has been actively considering numerous contingency plans that would allow play to commence once the public health situation has improved to the point that it is safe to do so. While we have discussed the idea of staging games at one location as one potential option, we have not settled on that option or developed a detailed plan. While we continue to interact regularly with government and public health officials, we have not sought or received approval of any plan from federal, state, and local officials or the Players Association. The health and safety of our employees, players, fans, and the public at large are paramount, and we are not ready at this time to endorse any particular format for staging games in light of the rapidly changing public health situation caused by the coronavirus. End quote. That statement from Major League Baseball. And Chase, that kind of gets to what I said earlier. I, you know, wasn't going to get my hopes up until we heard from Major League Baseball on whether or not that Arizona plan had any merit to it, and I'm sure it has been discussed, but as they put in the statement, they don't have a detailed plan in place for any of their options that they're discussing.
Whenever I hear a statement like that, this is automatically what comes in my mind, and that is, who told? Who released that? Mm. We weren't ready for that to get out yet.
Mm.
I mean, that's exactly what that was. I mean, they have had discussions about this, but they're not that far in the process, and you know, somebody talked, because that's what happens. Those are sources. So somebody talked and it got out there, and now they have to play damage control because they weren't ready to speak on it. So I think you're right that until you hear something definitive from Major League Baseball, don't get your hopes up. But that statement right there tells me that there have been discussions and that this plan is on the table. They're just not that deep into the process yet. So, you know, I mean, but again, these are unprecedented times and they have to have these conversations.
Sure. And like we've said multiple times, I'm sure that each league has dozens of different contingency plans. I wouldn't say in place, but, you know, different options on probably one massive spreadsheet. You know, we'll see if someone can hack into that spreadsheet in terms of what we were talking about earlier with people hacking into Zooms. But yeah, I mean, it's we're not really gonna know if this Arizona plan is feasible until what we see and what's reported in South Korea. If I'm being completely honest, if what happens in South Korea does not work, and that country has been a lot better about containing the virus than the United States has, if it doesn't work there, I don't know if it can work here. And on the flip side, if it does work over there, then I think that is a kind of a template for Major League Baseball to go off of if they are going to try to get the 2020 season in, or most of the 2020 season in, even if it's just in neutral sites in Arizona.
Today is April 7th. 1 month from today, May 7th, I believe that we're still having these same conversations, that sports aren't back. That's just my belief that, you know, now maybe they're closer, maybe there is more of a definitive plan, but I don't know if things really look a whole lot different a month from now.
With everything that we've seen transpire, let's say in the last, 3 weeks?
Yep.
I mean, the discussion of sports on May 7th could be, will sports be played in the entire calendar year of 2020? Will football season be in jeopardy? And there's already rumblings of that. We heard Kirk Herbstreit come out last week and say that he would be shocked if college football and NFL staged their seasons because of this. Those discussions could be a lot more rampant by May 7th, especially when the NFL draft is over with.
Well, and the whole goal is to play enough games, you know, like with the NHL, you know, do you want to finish the regular season or do you want to get into the postseason? Because we all know how competitive, how exciting the NHL postseason, the Stanley Cup playoffs are. And that kind of leads me into the question, the quarantine question of the day that you had on Twitter yesterday, the best postseason in sports. Because whether it's baseball or basketball or football or the NHL, we all get entertained by the postseason. I mean, I think even if you're not a huge NBA fan like me, you watch during the postseason, and that's what these leagues are trying to figure out of how can we still have some semblance of that, you know, or is it just going to be done, like you said, for the calendar year of 2020? So how would you answer the question, the best postseason in sports?
Man, I think it's really tough between the Stanley Cup playoffs and March Madness. I think, you know, the mystique of March Madness is something that is really hard to replicate. The fact that the entire country is invested and bought in to that tournament, those 3 weeks are three of the more fun weeks in all of sports. So I would say March Madness is probably the most popular postseason in all of sports, but my personal favorite is the Stanley Cup playoffs. Nothing tops the intensity of a 7-game series for the duration of 2 months, where every night almost in the National Hockey League there is fantastic high intensity, high level play of hockey on the ice. So I would say Stanley Cup playoffs a personal favorite, but it truly is hard to top March Madness.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. You know, looking at it from the professional leagues, I've always enjoyed the NBA finals, but the NBA playoffs up to that point usually aren't all that exciting. I think the finals are, but it's kind of getting to that point. You know, the World Series generally has some excitement to it, but you could have some dud series. I think, to your point, the Stanley Cup playoffs, generally from start to finish, you do have just bang-bang action just about every night. But to me, if I'm picking one, it's going to be March Madness. I mean,
and
the unpredictability.
Yeah, and the fact that a 15 can beat a 2, we've now seen a 16 beat a 1. The fact that a lot of those games are coin flip, toss-up games, I think lends to the word madness within March Madness. And, you know, it's really, really sad to see that that event did not take place this spring. And the fact that you had a lot of college basketball players, you know, including all the seniors, get all the way up to the conference tournaments. And then in the blink of an eye, their postseason is taken away from them. That's got to be a tough situation, and you know, really feel for all those individuals, especially for the ones that their basketball careers ended, not just their college days. You know, some will go on to the NBA or other pro leagues, but some, that was it. That was their last chance to win postseason games. So, you know, March Madness, NHL. See, the Stanley Cup playoffs, I don't think have really ever disappointed. You know, like you said, with Major League Baseball, there have been some postseasons where there's a lot of sweeps or not a lot of drama, and it's all done in a flash. And the NFL playoffs, yes, the one and done nature makes it very exciting. It can also lend to some duds like you were talking about. And if there aren't a handful of nail biter games right down to the last seconds in the fourth quarter or overtime, you know, the NFL playoffs has a higher risk of letting you down than, say, the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think Marquise would agree with that as a basketball fan when it comes to the NBA playoffs, where, yes, there are some dud series within there, but there's a high probability that there is going to be a widely entertaining seven-game series, whether it's the first round or the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes. There was once where the Boston Celtics, when they won their championship, they had a seven-game series against the eight-seed Atlanta Hawks. But you get that rarely. You get your Golden State Warriors, Dallas Mavericks every now and then. But lately, nah, not so much. You're usually going to get the 1-2-3 moving on. The 4-5 is usually a toss up. Maybe the 6 and the 3 may compete at a high level, but other than that, that 1 and 2 seeds those are automatic lately. So once it gets to the semifinals and the conference finals, that's when it really starts picking up.
Real quick, before we in great answers, because you know I think the unpredictability of the NCAA tournament is what does it for me. In this year, you know, you brought up getting robbed of the tournament this year because there were so many teams that you thought could possibly make a run at it, mm-hmm. that you didn't have that one that was really standing out. I think it was going to be a fun tournament. So I hate that we missed that. Voting is open, Ryan, for the Nashville Sports Bracket Round 2, the round of 32 in the Phil Bredesen region. You have Eddie George leading John Jenkins right now, 89-11. Mike Fisher over Kimmo Tiimonen, 82-18. Kevin Dyson, the 14 seed, leading Blaine Bishop, 65-35. Mookie Betts over Brad Hopkins, 76-24. Pecorine over Delaney Walker, 85-15. Victor Arvidsson, the 13 seed, over Sonny Gray, 60-40. Bruce Matthews, 63. Drew Maddox, 37. And Derrick Henry and Philip Forsberg. It is 60-40 Derrick Henry right now as voting has commenced for the round number 2 for our Nashville sports bracket. I think that's interesting. Derrick Henry, Philip mm-hmm. Forsberg going to be a tough matchup. I'll be watching that one all day long. Ryan, appreciate it. Another great edition of the Rundown. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 o'clock. We're doing that every day. Again, a slight programming change with all of this. Golic and Wingo from 5 to 9 weekdays here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. For Ryan Porth, for Marquise Munson, I am Chase McCabe. Stick around. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.